fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. In just under 2 hours, England will play Croatia in the second semifinal at the World Cup football tournament in Russia. Already in Sunday's championship game is France, which defeated Belgium on Tuesday 1-0. Samuel Umtiti, the defender who plays for Barcelona during the club season, finished a corner kick from Antoine Griezmann early in the second half. The victory gives France its third World Cup final appearance since they won the title in 1998. France moved into the championship game with wins against highly rated international squads, Argentina, Uruguay, and Belgium, proving their all-around strength. Don't forget, a version of this French team has fairly recent experience playing in a huge final, losing to Portugal in the European Cup just 2 years ago. For more on the first semifinal and a look ahead at the England-Croatia matchup, we're joined by Samson Omale from Moscow, Russia. Welcome, Samson. Sporty World Cup greetings to you.
Sporty greetings to you, Dan. The 2018 FIFA World Cup is gradually hitting the home stretch as we are left with just three more matches to go, with one finalist for Sunday's showdown already known. France has qualified for the finals of the 2018 FIFA World Cup, and this was the moment they sealed their spot for the finals.
Griezmann with the corner, kicking Umtiti! Arriving on the near post! There's the breakthrough! It's Samuel Umtiti for France!
Didier Deschamps' side will face England or Croatia in Moscow on Sunday. France coach Didier Deschamps heaped praise on his players after they reached the World Cup final with a 1-0 win over Belgium, saying the lost final at Euro 2016 was still on his mind. Belgium manager Roberto Martinez was left frustrated by his team missing out to a set-piece goal, a familiar outcome in this tournament.
It's a game that it was very tight. There were not many big moments that they were going to decide the game. The moments are in the box. I felt that when we started in the second half with a better tempo and we were looking a little bit stronger and probably growing into the game is when we conceded the goal from a corner. And I think you can explain that the difference between the defeat or winning, it was just down to one dead ball situation. I think that was how close the game was.
Some journalists covering the World Cup here in Moscow had mixed reaction on France qualification for the finals.
Well, France deserved to be in the final because of the way they played. They controlled the game as much as Belgium really pushed them towards the end of the second half. I thought France were a bit professional because they knew how to control the venom that Belgium possessed, especially in that second half. And secondly, I think they played as a team. They defended as a unit. We've heard of a lot of criticism on such players as Giroud, but he was phenomenal. When they were under pressure, he was doing the defending.
Unfortunately, the best side was eliminated, and it's a sad advertisement for football. Having a team going to the final whose top lead marksman has no goal, I don't know what kind of picture it paints for the game, but probably. But like I said, they're in the final and they did what they had to do. It's sad seeing Belgium leaving out.
In the meantime, Russian President Vladimir Putin has congratulated his French counterpart Emmanuel Macron on Team France's victory over Belgium and advancement to the 2018 FIFA World Cup final. The Russian President also made a phone call to King Philippe of Belgium, who was also present at the game. Putin noted that Team Belgium has demonstrated supreme football throughout the entire championship. The match at the over 68,000 seat capacity St. Petersburg Arena saw an attendance of some 64,000 people, including FIFA President Gianni Infantino, French President Emmanuel Macron, as well as King Philippe of Belgium with his spouse Queen Mathilde. The second semi-final of the 2018 FIFA World Cup will be played on Wednesday between Croatia and England at the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. The two teams will meet for the eighth time overall, but for the first time in the World Cup Finals tournament. Croatia Croatia have been very impressive in this World Cup as they won all their group matches, which also included a 3-0 hammering of Argentina. Croatian 2001 Wimbledon men's single champion Goran Ivanovic believes England risk underestimating his compatriots in today's World Cup semi-finals.
I hope we don't lose to English because you already are in the final, you already won, you coming home, you bringing a trophy, you are so arrogant, you are the best, you are the most beautiful, and for sure you coming home, but I hope not with the trophy. I hope he plays first match, so I go somewhere in the pub and just watch with the other English people, and you know, hopefully I'm going to be last one standing and laughing.
England manager Gareth Southgate thinks his team are nowhere near the level they will be capable of reaching in the future.
We've talked a lot to the players and all of the staff about this is just another game, the same preparation. That's the approach we've taken throughout. I think, if anything, there's been less pressure because, you know, getting out of the group, if you don't get out of the group, you go home and there's a different sort of reaction to the team.
I spoke to some British and African journalists at the Luzhinsky Stadium who expressed cautious optimism on England's chances at lifting the most coveted trophy.
I don't think any of us really expected them to get this far, but they've been playing with plenty of dynamism, plenty of energy, and they surprise everybody, surprise the tournament. They've got a chance. The way the draw's opened up for them has given them a massive chance as well. They haven't had to play one of the elite teams as yet. Croatia will really test them on that respect, but there's so much optimism and belief within the England side at the moment. Absolutely, they've got a great chance of a first World Cup final in 52 years.
I think it's been a great few weeks for England. I think no one expected them to do this well, but it's been really encouraging, and yeah, they're playing well, they're getting better.
If you look at the entire tournament, England have been a different kind of unit. I mean, they've been unbelievable. They've played a different kind of game from the kind of game we've seen England play over the years. Under Gareth Southgate, I mean, you can see some constructive play, you see fluid passing, you see a team that understands.
And finally, football's governing body FIFA is pleased and has welcomed the rescue of 12 Thai boys from a cave, but has ruled out the possibility of the boys attending Sunday's World Cup final in Moscow. FIFA boss Gianni Infantino had invited the boys' Wild Bows football team to the final as FIFA guest last week, but FIFA said it had been informed that due to the medical condition of the boys, they would not be in the position to travel to Moscow. Elite foreign divers and Thai Navy SEALs saved the final batch of four boys on Tuesday after an 18-day ordeal that captivated the world. The Thai footballers aged from 11 to 16 had been stuck deep underground after setting off to explore the cave with their 25-year-old coach after training on June the 23rd. From the Luzhniki Stadium here in Moscow, I am Samson Omale.
Thanks, Samson. Perhaps we'll see the Thai boys get a round of applause at an international FIFA tournament in the coming years. We're also glad to know they were able to be evacuated safely. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young here in Washington, D.C., and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now, my take on the semifinal and the final is that Croatia would probably provide the best game for France, while England would be the most hyped cup final we've seen in a long time. The rivalry between England and France, just separated by a narrow stretch of water, is strong. It sounds funny to say this, as they have perhaps the most popular professional league in the world, numerous well-known players, and a world football heritage. But this year's England, of the four semifinalists, to me, might be considered an underdog against Croatia. After all, they're a young, fairly inexperienced team who was chased out of the European Cup just 2 years ago by that tournament's Cinderella side, Iceland. We're joined right now in studio by VOA intern Prince Nesta for his take on Wednesday's semifinal match between England and Croatia. Welcome to the show, Prince.
Thank you, Dan. I'm really glad to be here. Did you know that it's really amazing that if you look at six of the last seven games pitting England against Croatia have all been played on a Wednesday?
I can't believe that, actually. I'm surprised to see that piece of trivia. It's an unlikely, likely nugget. But the first thing I wanted to ask you, Prince, yeah. is what do you think about Croatia? I mean, I just said that I feel like England is the underdog, but you might have an argument against that.
I actually think that Croatia actually the underdog, and I'm speaking from the perspective or the point of view that if you look at when Croatia entered this particular tournament, they actually ranked number 20 in the world, and England were ranked 12th. Right. And so from that point of view, and also when you look at head to head, they have met 8 times previously, with England winning 4 times. Croatia have only won twice, and there's been 1 draw. And so if you also look at the leagues, you can compare the English Premier League and the Croatian Premier League. I mean, players like Mario Mandzukic and Xhaka play for Juventus. Kovacic and Modric play for Real Madrid. Rakitic plays for Barcelona. But overally, if you look at the English squad, they have most players from the England Premier League. If you look at Kyle Walker, John Stones, Sterling plays for City, Lingard, Rashford, Young, they play for Manchester United, Harry Kane, Dele Alli, and Kyle Rose plays for Tottenham Hotspurs. And of course, they're used to the pressure. I understand the point of view that they're very young and stuff like that, but they're used to this kind of pressure. I mean, they're used to, you know, the English-British pressure, and of course, they'll be expected to perform the same way that they always are expected to perform in their respective leagues.
So, I mean, there's certainly something to be said about playing in huge tournaments and yeah. huge games like the English star players do. Do you think they'll feel comfortable in the pressure of the semifinals? And then if they make it to the finals, they'll feel comfortable as well?
Absolutely. I looked at the English team. I look at their performance during the quarterfinals, and I look at the way that they played against Sweden. They look totally comfortable, and I'm looking at it from the point of view that they're going to withstand the pressure and they're going to pull out the best performance in this particular semifinals. But don't rule out the Croatia. Croatia is actually a team that has experienced players, a few experienced players like Luka Modric, Mandzukic, and Subasic, and Rakitic also, who are pulling the strings in the midfield, and I can see a really great performance as far as this match is concerned.
Thanks for those Nesta nuggets, Prince. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Can you remember the opening game of this tournament back in early June? The tournament started with Russia's 5-0 win over Saudi Arabia on June 14th. Here are some interesting numbers. So far, we've seen 6 goals by England's Harry Kane, 158 goals overall, 210 yellow cards, over 47,000 completed passes, of which Spain completed over 3,000. And here's a good one for you runners out there. The top ground gainer of the tournament was Russia's Roman Zabnin. He plays during the club season for Spartak Moscow. Speaking of Russia and the World Cup, I asked Swedish journalist Stefan Lofgren to tell us about his experience in Russia covering the World Cup this summer. He said the infrastructure and organization has been outstanding.
On the question of how Russia has managed the World Cup, you know, much of the talk before the World Cup obviously centered on the political aspects of Russia hosting the Cup, and it's no doubt that it's been a successful tournament from a PR perspective for the Russians and for the Russian government. We haven't had any major mishaps and no fan violence, for example. And the football has been great. The weather's been great for the most part. But I do, you know, I think it's important to sort of separate the politics and the footballing aspects. And if you set the politics aside, And just look at the football and how that's been managed. There's no doubt that this tournament has been a huge success. It's been a wonderful experience from I think both a supporter and certainly a journalist point of view. I think one of the reasons is that you feel that Russia has a real footballing culture. You know, people are interested in the game. Television sets are tuned into the games in every restaurant that you walk into, and that makes a big difference. The organization has been terrific. The transportation has worked really well. The stadiums, there's a lot of newly built stadiums, and they are spectacular, some of them. And transportation has worked really well with fans taking advantage of these free long-distance trains. But I think most importantly, the reception that we've been getting from the thousands of volunteers and people, just regular people on the street, has been absolutely terrific. People have just been so welcoming, eager perhaps to make sure that visitors have a positive experience, and perhaps trying to dispel some of these negative images that some people may have had of Russia before coming here.
That's Swedish journalist Stefan Lofgren. I also asked Stefan about what lessons he thinks the North American World Cup, coming up in just 8 short years, can learn from this year's tournament in Russia.
Of course, the United States, together with Canada and Mexico, will host the World Cup 8 years from now. And it's interesting to think about what lessons the U.S. can learn from the Russia World Cup. There are strong similarities between Russia and the North American tournament, I think. You know, one of them being the vast geography. Russia is a very big country, and even though the tournament is only taking place in about a quarter of the country, the distances between host cities is very big. And that can create some problems in that you don't get that sense of community with all the fans together in one place. What's worked really well here in Russia, I think, is that Moscow has become kind of a hub. Not only, you know, it has two stadiums here, so it's also played host to several matches, and this semifinal and the coming final will be played here. But people have been passing through Moscow for a couple of days. You know, they're going from one city to another, and they've really, I think, they've enjoyed themselves coming here. There's been big street parties and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people out on the street. And I wonder how that will look in the United States. You may not have that same sort of natural hub as Russia has had here with Moscow. So the question is, you know, how do you create that feeling of community? I think in the U.S., football, you know, is obviously growing in popularity and is already a very popular sport, but it's one of many popular sports. It's not the number one, undisputed number one sport as it is in most countries. And one of the challenges that the U.S. has is that you don't have that kind of shared passion, for, perhaps, where everyone follows the one sport. And I think that will be a little bit of a challenge to the U.S. and you know, Canada, making fans feel like they're at the most important sporting event on earth.
That's Stefan Lofgren from Russia, analyzing his experience this year following the World Cup and offering some questions and some ideas for the organizers ahead of the 2026 World Cup in North America. Switching pitches to, some might call it, a more subdued sport, we'll spin the globe to England, where people may be forgetting a little bit that the Wimbledon tennis tournament is moving toward its final weekend. With an update now, here's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. In Wimbledon tennis action, I'm going to keep it on the women's side today. On Tuesday, American Serena Williams defeated Italy's Camilla Giorgi to reach her 11th semifinal at Wimbledon. After the match, Serena said the win was hard fought, but she never lost her composure.
For whatever reason, today I was so calm. Even when I was down the first set, I thought, well, she's playing great. There's nothing I can do. I feel like I'm doing a lot of the right things, and it is what it is.
Serena's semifinal match will be against Julia Görges of Germany, who Serena says is a familiar opponent.
Yeah, I played Julia in the French, but that was 4 or 5 weeks ago. That doesn't matter. This is a whole new match. It's a new surface. It's everything. So we're starting from zero, so I'm going to go out there and just do what I can and do my best and see what happens.
Serena defeated Görges at that French Open tournament. Görges is in the semifinals at Wimbledon for the first time, following her quarterfinal win against Netherlands' Kiki Bertens. After the match, Görges said she's excited to get to this stage of the tournament.
Pretty unreal for me at the moment to get to that stage at a Grand Slam. It's been obviously always a dream for every player to be in a semis in Wimbledon. Well, but I'm just very glad the way I handled everything today, because it wasn't an easy match at all. It was quite tough.
And Görges said she's looking forward to her next match against Serena.
Well, obviously she has won so many titles here, and not only here, a lot of Grand Slams beside Wimbledon. And well, it's a great opportunity for me to meet her at that stage. It's an honor to share the court with her.
Latvia's Helena Ostapenko also reached the semifinals with her straight set win against Dominika Cibulková of Slovakia, 7-5, 6-4. She also enters the semis for the first time, and after her match, she said she hopes having won a major will play in her favor.
Of course, it's a big advantage that I have already a Grand Slam in my pocket, because I had this opportunity to play those big matches already. But here is a completely different surface, different Grand Slam, and all different. So, I mean, I have all this motivation to just win another one.
Helena will next play former semifinalist and 11th seed Angie Kerber of Germany. Kerber defeated Russia's Daria Kasatkina in the quarterfinals and is the highest seed going into the semifinals. After her match, Kerber said she's had a good run at the majors this year.
Of course, it's not bad. I mean, I start the year very good, and also Paris, where clay is not my favorite surface, I was playing even better than the years before. And now we are here, and I'm still in the tournament, and I'm looking forward now to playing the semis here.
And Kerber spoke about the challenge of facing her next opponent, Helena Ostapenko, for the first time.
I think it's a big challenge, especially about Ostapenko, where I never played against her. And I mean, she won also a Grand Slam. So I think it will be a really good match. And I think the match starts from zero. I mean, the pressure is not always on my side. I mean, she won the Grand Slam as well. But, yeah, and I think that we are both looking forward to playing the semis.
You can enjoy the women's semifinal matches on Thursday. The women's final will be on Saturday. And the women of Wimbledon don't have to worry about a World Cup conflict during their championship match. The World Cup final is scheduled for Sunday, the same day as the championship match on the men's side. And even though America did not qualify for this year's World Cup, Serena Williams has said the atmosphere at Wimbledon is so exciting, you can't help but root for the Three Lions of England. Well, as you know, England plays their semifinal match against Croatia on Wednesday, so this could get interesting. I'll have more sporty news tomorrow. Dan, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the big news coming out of Wimbledon. South Africa's Kevin Anderson just defeated three-time champion Roger Federer in an extended quarterfinal match. Down 2-0, Anderson came back to win 3-2 with a 13-11 win in the final set. He also broke Federer's streak of 34 consecutive sets won at Wimbledon. And that wraps up the July 11th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. I'll be back for more tomorrow as we await the outcome of the second World Cup semifinal tonight, and we'll review it tomorrow between England and Croatia. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanov. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over the past 5 years, the Feed the Future Nigeria Livelihoods Project has helped pull some of the most vulnerable families in Nigeria out of poverty. This U.S. government foreign assistance program has helped Nigerians improve agricultural production, income generation, nutrition, and sanitation. The $22.6 million program in Nigeria began in 2013 and concluded just last month. Administered by the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and implemented by Catholic Relief Services, the program initially helped 42,000 poor households in Abuja, Nigeria's capital, Kebbi, and Sokoto states to increase agricultural production, diversify incomes, and improve nutrition. It also provided livelihoods planning skills, adult literacy and numeracy instruction, and cash transfers to the most vulnerable households. In 2017, the program expanded to Adamawa, Borno, and Yobe states, reaching 10,000 more households. This project took a holistic approach to agriculture, to livelihoods, and to social development, said USAID Mission Director Stephen Hagen. It addressed the needs of the extreme poor by improving incomes and reducing vulnerabilities, and in this way serving as a model for efforts to build resilience in rural Nigeria. The USAID program introduced new technology, improving agricultural production and access to input markets such as quality seeds for smallholder farmers. As a result, crop yields doubled for more than 33,000 farmers. The program also helped farmers to reduce post-harvest losses. The activity engaged poor households in the rural economy by providing business skills and financial literacy support, vocational trainings and lending schemes, and safe spaces for adolescent girls. Additionally, more than 2,000 community workers were trained to deliver over 1.5 million counseling and group sessions on nutrition that led to a 22% drop in stunting, 10% drop in wasting, and 53% increase in exclusive breastfeeding rates in targeted locations. A cash transfer component alone helped lift 2,740 households out of poverty. State and local governments have shown positive support towards sustaining the gains from the program. The U.S. is proud to work with its partner Nigeria to improve the lives of the Nigerian people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the 31st African Union Summit has wrapped up in Mauritania with advisory decisions on Libya, Somalia and South Sudan. The significance of the African Union with Deputy Chairperson Kwesi Kwoti on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.